Hi, I'm Sam.
I'm Callum.
And one of us is bored.
This week, we're discussing Titanic 2 and definitely not Space Jam 2.
Captain?
Oh, you could say that.
Our unnecessary sequel munch continues with Titanic 2. Those of you who were paying attention at the end of our last episode may or may not have... Well, I guess you weren't paying attention. You may have incorrectly presumed that we would be watching Space Jam 2. I suspect that was probably just some, like, mishearing on your part, dear listener. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, it was an auditory hallucination, and we're really sorry that that happened to you.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. We hope you get better soon. No, we're talking about we're talking about Titanic 2 this week. In all seriousness, Space Jam 2... When you're planning ahead as far as we have, which is a bit uncharacteristic for us, but we have been for a little while now, Space Jam 2 was quite readily available for quite a while. And then when it came for us to watch it, it was just not really anywhere anymore. And you had seen it before and I'd not, but like, I don't think either of us were really willing to pay for the privilege of watching it. So
no, it's not worth £4 even. Like, nah, fuck that.
So here we are, dear listener. Titanic 2, as far as choices go, this probably only really technically barely fits into the category this month because it's not technically a sequel.
No.
It's a sequel in name only. It's actually made by The Asylum, which as far as, like, they were really, really notorious in the late 2000s, early 2010s for obviously Sharknado, but they did a whole bunch of, I think they were really famous for like their Versus films. So it was like Mega Shark versus the Giant Octopus.
Airplane versus Volcano.
Snakes on a Train. Lots of sort of loose parodies of existing franchises, you know, Nazis at the Center of the Earth, that sort of thing. So they're very out there. But when I was at, when I was in college, The Asylum was known for just being shit, basically. which it is. Like, don't get me wrong, it is pretty shitty. But it's tongue in cheek. Like I don't, they know it's shit, basically, and I think that's part of the appeal for some of these. That said, I kind of can't believe how many films they've actually produced. They've made more than 500 films, including 300 original ones, and so there's a lot of shite in there. Like, we could easily have an entire year covering films that have been made by The Asylum and not even scratch the surface. But I think this is our first dip into The Asylum on One of Us is Bored.
And it's my mum's fault, you know. I was in the living room contemplating watching Space Jam 2, and she's like, Sam, and I'm like, what? She's like, I found a pointless sequel, which is nice. And she's like, Titanic 2, and I'm like, the name alone, I'm sold, and also it's free. So it's on YouTube as well.
Oh, is it actually on YouTube? I watched it on Prime, but that's so funny. Yeah, had you heard of this before?
Yeah, I knew there was a bad sequel. In fact, I know there's a couple of bad sequels, but this is the one that's, like, if you Google Titanic 2, it's the one that pops up, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, like, I knew it couldn't be good.
Like, yeah.
Just because it's not the same team. So, yeah, you're right, it's not really a sequel. It's not the same people, but it's too funny to not. Just the concept. Did you know there's a real-life Titanic 2 being built?
I was going to bring this up. Yes, I did know about this. Some guy who was trying to launch his political career or something off the back of it, or was trying to use that as part of the publicity stunt for it. But the project was apparently dead until about a month ago, when he started suggesting that he might try and bring it back to life again. So there is a Titanic 2 potentially in the process of being built, which, you know, fine. I guess
he sees the Titanic submarine disaster, right, and he's like, you know what, we need the second boat, like, come
yeah.
on
yeah great So we might be getting that in real life at some point. Watch this space, I guess. Or, well, not us. We won't be reporting on it, but maybe.
Some people have too much money, team. They really do.
Some people do. Yeah. Funnily enough, just before we go into that, just while we're talking about sequels and stuff, I discovered, I did know about Titanic 2. I didn't know that there was, again, a sequel to that called Titanic 666, which is a supernatural horror-themed sequel. I only read about this last night, and, like, again, when I read about it, I thought, oh, that sounds really funny, we should watch that. And then I watched Titanic 2, and now I'm really against watching Titanic 666, because don't want to, like, I mean, at the risk of, you know, giving away all my secrets up front, this wasn't my favorite watch ever, so I'm not really sure that I want another one, but
you have to be in a certain mood for bad movies to be funny, otherwise it just feels like it is a waste of budget time, and well, my time more than anything else. Like,
yeah,
why would you make something deliberately shit? Or, like, are you just not good enough, so you just kind of lean into this? Because I feel like there must be some people in that team who actually try, and it's just that they can't.
The funny thing is, like, so a good example being, I don't think all the acting in this is horrendous. Like, there are bits of acting that are actually all right, but the script that they've got to work with is terrible. So, you know, some of the lines of dialogue are pretty piss poor. And we know ourselves from our short films, like, if there is something that is just difficult to read or that just doesn't sound like something someone would say, there's no way you can deliver it well. And there's too many instances in this film where a character just says something and you think, that's not how people speak to each other.
No.
You know, like, so you could have the best actor in the world and it would still be awful.
But they didn't have the best actors in the world. There were some that were passable.
Yeah.
Some of them were really bad. Really, truly awful acting.
Yeah. And I think beyond that, like, even at the time, the CGI would have been pretty bad. But now especially, it looks terrible. Like, some of the shots of people, like, the one that jumps out for me is the guy that falls through the ice at one point, and he basically just, like, he falls quicker than like gravity would pull a person down. Like, he's just like, and he's gone, sort of thing. And there's a bit where like a woman face plants at one point and then gets back up like it was nothing, and it's like, yeah.
Well, it's just even basic stuff where I feel like you don't even need to do CGI, you could just got stock footage. Like, the fucking helicopter looked awful.
Like the boat, I don't understand how they managed to produce, like, terrible CGI bubbles and things like that. Like, you could produce real bubbles and then impose those over the top if you wanted, and instead they decided to make these crappy CGI ones that look terrible. A lot of the water is CGI, like, outside the ship, obviously. Mm-hmm. A lot of the waves are CGI. A lot of unnecessary things here are just computer generated, and you kind of think there's surely could have been more effective ways to do this. And I suppose the goal here is not to make a timeless classic. The goal is to make a tongue-in-cheek mockbuster, I guess.
But then there's respecting the craft at all. Do you know what I mean? Like, why bother if you're going to deliberately make bad waves? Like, why bother? Because it feels like you're taking the piss out of the audience then. Like, it's so bad, it's just disrespectful to cinema. Like, just watching stuff, because it seems like you're just... Like, there's a difference between accidentally making a bad movie or making a parody.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and what they've done is... it feels like they're deliberately making it as bad as possible, and at which point you're like, right, now this is just not funny anymore. It's just sad that you're trying so hard to be shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think... I would agree with that. It gets to a point where it's quite hard to defend it in some ways. Not that you necessarily want to defend it, but I think production companies like The Asylum, I think there is room for that. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't put in some effort at the same time. Like, just because you know it's a stupid concept doesn't necessarily mean you have to cut every corner. Like, you could still try.
You can make it like Snakes in a Plane. Like, it's still bad, but it's like effort put into the bad.
Yeah. Some of the storytelling here is a little bit muddled as well. Like, there's quite a lot of So there's two main like places of emphasis, I would say. And one is on the ship itself, which, you know, quite rightly so, Titanic 2, of course, there should be some emphasis there. And then the other is on global warming and climate change, although a lot of that is kind of like ham-fisted in there and seems to be forgotten about as the film goes on. So they're quite heavy with it here. It's this ice falling off of a frozen landmass, which is basically going to cause a mega tsunami, and it's because of climate change. And you think, all right, fair enough. At least it's not just like someone being stupid and crashing into an iceberg again. Like, slightly different, you know. Okay, you know, points for creativity. And we get, you know, the dads out there researching. And there's a whole bunch of story there, and then it just kind of vanishes, and none of it's ever mentioned again. And it's just really weird that you would make that kind of like a key plot point to then just never reference it.
Well, even the boat's forgotten about. So, like, yeah. The initial part, it's like, oh, everyone on the boat's going to die. How sad, right? Listener, in the end, there's only two survivors, and the only reason she survives is because her nepotism. Her dad's the Coast Guard leader guy.
Mm.
And also the billionaire who made the boat badly. We're meant to care about him. Spoiler, he didn't survive, but like, there was this mad concocted plan where they thought they could revive him. I'm like, no, he's been drowned for half an hour. You're not reviving that corpse. There's no way.
Yeah, so they have their little Jack and Rose moment at the end where he basically willingly sacrifices himself and she... But the difference between Jack and Rose and Amy and Hayden is that Rose wasn't forced to look at Jack's corpse. Like, he got to kind of like drift down to sea, and it's all very sad, and the rest of that, he goes down to the bottom of the ocean. Hayden is left dead floating in front of Amy for an inordinate amount of time.
Yeah, she wiggles his face around.
Yeah, and she then tries to revive him like a long time after, which it's a good, like, even if she had managed to revive him, like, the level of brain damage that would have been present, like, oh, not that we're looking for, you know, realism in Titanic 2, I suppose, but...
No, but like some respectful storytelling consideration, please.
Yes.
Because also, they're not very likable people. So they we'll go to the main story in a minute, but their whole plot, those two, is they've gone down to the medical wing to rescue the other nurse, who's also a bitch. Mm-hmm. And they murder her with a doorway. And then it's just them escaping from their failed rescue attempt. I'm like, well, that's dumb. You could just... not done that and got the exact same result. Like, she died either way.
So the other nurse was Kelly, and I think that's meant to be like Amy's, is she one of her friends? She has a colleague, but I think she's meant to be a friend as well. And what happens is Amy gets trapped in the door, and it's quite funny. Like, she's just like, I'm stuck, and he's like, you're gonna push her through, like, I can't hold the door open anymore. And he's holding this metal door open with like an axe turned, yeah, sideways. So, like, the axe is having to take all the pressure off this door, which is... I'm not entirely sure why the door was trying to slam shut again. Like, there wasn't any reason for that. It's not like there's water coming in from the other side or anything like that. It's just like it's on a spring or something that it seems to want to stay shut. So I don't know about that. But the important thing here is that Amy's stuck halfway through. She somehow, as if she's been slathered up in butter or something, goes shooting through the other side. Kelly follows her through and then gets basically chopped in half. And there's this big dramatic, Kelly, no! And then they're kind of over it really quick. Like,
yeah! And the door's still open.
Yeah.
I'm like, why did it shut?
Very funny, I have to say. Like, but actually, I think, like, moments of peril like that in this film has a really bad pacing problem in terms of, yeah, I would guess the moments of peril. Like, so either they're dragged out for too long, or... they don't actually feel that dangerous to begin with. So shortly after that scene, there's a bit where Hayden and Amy are trying to cross an electrified puddle of water, which is quite funny in itself because she's dangling for a while and he's like, I'll come back and save you. And I'm like chatting at my screen saying, what the fuck are you going to do? Like, how are you going to save her? He grabs her arm, pulls it back up onto the thing and goes, are you okay? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, how? I'm slipping. Whoa. Like, it's so stupid. But not only that, the boat is slowly tipping over. So the water beneath them should be moving. It shouldn't be a case of like, oh, here's just this stationary puddle. And then he gets to the other side, drop down, and he hits the ground. And I'm just like, there's no way like the entire corridor is not filling up with water. Why is there just this one lone puddle in the middle of a corridor, which happens to be right by the wires. The ship got, like, why are the wires exposed as well? Is that not just like a maintenance issue? Like, why have the wires suddenly fallen apart? Like, I just don't understand why.
Because the explosion, I guess, which happens. But one of the biggest issues with this film is them conveying the disaster, and it's because it's a disaster film. But at no point do you believe that this is being filmed on a tipping boat. Because they've tilted the camera sideways, but that does not make it look like it's listing because everyone's running straight. And I'm like, it does not look like there's a panicked ship sinking because the boat looks empty first off. There's like 30 passengers on this boat. No matter how many times they try and show us the same people walking up and down the corridor, you can tell there's only 30 people on this boat. And they're not that panicked because there's a bit where the guy's like, this is not a drill, get your life vest. And everyone just stands still.
I noted that. That was so funny. Like the way, like, and he says it repeatedly, and everyone's just like, okay. Like,
we're looking at everyone's reactions, and no one's moving.
And it's not in the same way that people do that at work when there's like a fire alarm, and everyone's like, oh, is this a real one? It's like a genuine, like, just not doing anything, like just
2 minutes of just looking at people staring up at the tannoy.
Yeah, and I think that's it. It's like there isn't really any moment in this where you feel like there's danger, and that's it. So like the moments of peril, as I was saying, they're either dragged out too long or they don't feel dangerous. So like, I guess, you know, people looking up at the tannoy and not doing anything or being stuck in the door, those moments are more funny than they are like life-threatening. Yeah. Like you don't feel, there's no point at which I'm worried for any of these characters. And again, with it being the kind of film it is, I suppose, demanding or expecting a kind of emotional investment or to care about them is maybe a little bit too much to ask, which I appreciate, but I feel like I should be feeling something other than mild irritation at times.
I don't know if they tried to play it off and that we might not like them. I feel like they tried to make them unlikable and then pivoted because they realized that wouldn't work. So One of the first scenes we see Kelly say, oh, I wouldn't want to give CPR to any of these people, I'd rather see them drown. I'm like, oh, what a nasty nurse. Like, those are the nurses of the ship. And they have this doctor they didn't bother hire. Do we see the doctor at any point?
I don't know that we do, you know. Is it? It's no, because there's Dr. Kim, but she's the glaciologist who's with Amy's dad. So I would say we probably don't.
No, he's off doing something else at all times when we're looking at the nurses.
Yeah.
Who are clearly in an office somewhere. Like, they're not on a boat. They're just in an office. It just does not look boaty at all.
Just speaking of things not looking boaty, when there's the initial wave that first hits the ship. So basically what happens is a big chunk. Well, the glacier starts to collapse, and we'll need to talk about that in a second as well. But when that does collapse, that causes a massive first wave to go towards the ship. And the story here is that in theory, the ship should be fine because it's out at sea already. But because of where they are, there's icebergs under the water that would be pushed up with the power of this wave. And so it's basically going to be, you know, another iceberg incident, like regardless of whether or not you're actually going to strike one that's above the ground. Fair enough. Fine. But when the wave hits, all of the actors literally sway from side to side on the spot themselves. It's not like they're in a room that's tilting or anything. They sway them, and you see them like literally throwing themselves in like certain directions at points. So like it's all very method acting because you have to act as if you're on a tilting ship. But the first wave itself, when they're swaying, they don't look like a boat's just been hit by a massive wave. They look like they're a bit like, you know, they've had one too many fucking cocktails at the at the discotheque or whatever. So it's not very convincing. The glacier itself collapsing as well. I love that started when one of the glaciologists, I don't know if you remember this, he had like 4 or 5 metal canisters in his hands and he drops one. It doesn't look very heavy, but that's enough for all the cracks to start appearing.
Stop.
At which point
I don't remember that.
Where was it? Dr. Kim and Amy's dad. Now, what's her dad called again? Just because I think let's do him some respect. What's his actual name? Amy, Captain James Maim. So James and Dr. Kim are on this glacier with an unnamed doctor, yeah, who drops the canister. That causes the cracks to start appearing in the glacier, at which point he falls through with the funny CGI. They then run away, and Dr. Kim does like a face plant onto the ground. I'm not being funny, but she as a full person is going to be heavier than like a flask sized canister, and yet she doesn't fall through the ice. And he says something like, there's a bit where James goes to her, grab my hand, and you see her sliding backwards, except it's clearly someone dragging her off screen, so she goes whoosh. And and he does grab her, but it's the depiction of gravity within this film, whenever anyone falls or slides, or it's so funny. Like, it's just good fun.
Actually, talking about the toast card guy, just in general, he is the most irritating fucking character, because he's the one who knows everything, right? And he's dictating what people are to do. He's just like giving the worst fucking advice based off nothing. So he's like, don't go into the lifeboats because they're going to be more danger. I'm like, what? The boats? He's like, stay on the boat, get in the middle of the boat, use a scuba suit. And I'm like, you don't give a flying fuck about anyone else in this boat but your kid. And that's a bit shit.
But not only that, he actually didn't give much of a fuck about her until like maybe the second half, because there's a bit where I noted he's on the phone and one of his colleagues turns to him and goes, is that your daughter? And he's like, no, it's a nurse on board. And I'm like, is your conflict with your daughter really that she went out with Hayden at one point? Is that what this is? Because do you remember, like, Hayden and Amy have this chat really early on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole, it's a big exposition dump. Do you remember that time your dad punched me in the face and broke my nose? Oh, well, you kind of deserved it. You did take me out to... So there's a big like rivalry there, like, oh, you've proven yourself to be dishonorable, like as if like anyone fucking talks like that, but like
I mean, his fucking harem. It's harem,
I know, harem. Yeah, right, his hair, I noted that, right? So the where is it, the way that we're first introduced to Hayden. Can I just say, Hayden like is meant to be like the love interest and the main like hot guy of the film. He's not as hot as one of the other like ship's drivers. There's a couple of people who like I would pick before him. There's meant to go him as love interest. He has a harem of women, like two on each arm, and there's a bit where he looks over his shoulder back at Amy and sad music plays. And it's just so funny. Like, I can't.
He just looks like this old man. He just looks too old to be her love interest. And he's got this like 90s haircut, and it's too late to have a 90s haircut. It's 2010. Like, come on now.
Yeah, come on. Get it together.
She's in it for the money, 100%.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I'm not sure what he's in it for, because she's not exactly like swimming with personality, but...
Oh. At one point she's delivering, not CPR, she's holding a lady's... Well, she's not doing anything actually. She's just looking down at a lady's leg wound, because she's meant to be the medical staff. And he walks by and she stops what she's doing to just stare at him for a minute while this other woman's reaching out trying to get her to come and help her. And I'm like, wow, dude.
She does that a couple of times, because there's another bit as well where a helicopter flies over and she's like, come on, we've got to get you up. We've got to. And then she sits and looks at this helicopter for 15 seconds. And meanwhile, the woman's still on the ground, like with her leg basically falling off. And then she's like, okay, come on. Just so that like Amy can have her bloody fucking dramatic moment of looking at the helicopter above. Very funny.
But it makes me want her to not live. Like, I think she's awful. I'm like, why do you get to survive? Oh, actually, I'm wrong, aren't I? I said there was only one survivor, but no, there's a little helicopter full of really injured people who might survive.
So the way that Wikipedia interprets it, I didn't take it this way, dear listener, but supposedly the people on the helicopter are the passengers that Hayden ordered to get onto the helicopter earlier in the film. Now, he did this. This is the film showing us actually he's a changed person and he's very considerate. He's like, get those passengers on the helicopter. And the guy's like, but that goes against protocol. And he's like, I said do it. Da, 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 da. Fine. Apparently, those are the only people that survive in the end. So with Amy and her dad, who put himself in danger no need, I think, really. I think it's fair to say, needlessly so. There's all these other little bits of dialogue in this that are really quite funny. Like, we learn that the ship barely passed inspection. There's a bit where one of the people in the what would you call it? Like, not the captain's office, but I guess the steering room or whatever. He just turns on the bridge, thank you. He turns to him and goes, you having another one of your bad feelings, Captain? Like, stop. stop film. It just really lays it on thick. My favorite thing in this film, or my favorite line in this film, is actually in the trailer. And I've said this to you before. I might have even mentioned it on this podcast like years ago, because I'm pretty sure I've referenced this. Was there's a bit where one character turns to another and says, "Looks like history's repeating itself," which I think is so fucking funny, because that's just... why? Why would you lay it on that thick? But it does.
It all makes sense now. So Hayden is an inherently unlikable guy, right? Mm-hmm. But we're meant to like believe that he's a stud. Hayden's played by the director and the writer.
Oh, is he? All right, that makes sense. That's why he's got that part then, I guess. Okay, fair enough.
It all makes sense now, because like Hayden's actually awful, but I guess this guy wanted to write himself a little bit where he sacrifices himself and the love interest is crying over him. Writing some fanfic of himself.
Oh, funny. Do you remember, this wasn't ever a throwaway line. I don't think this is like a key, it's not a key part of the story, but like within the lore of the film, do you remember why the Titanic 2 is built?
No, I don't.
It's meant to be a tribute to the lives lost on the original Titanic.
Stop. No.
It's selfless. Like, it's a selfless memorial.
A selfless memorial that can't take a side on collision, as he says. Oh, yeah, we can't take a side on collisions. What? What do you mean you can't take a side on collision?
I also love that when they launched the boat in the first instance, clearly they didn't have enough money to spend on like safety features, but they did have enough to send up a huge number of fireworks and also rent like bloody the Red Arrows or something to do a flyover like as it takes off.
For all 30 people that are waving on the side, it just looks so empty.
Yeah, and I think... to be honest, it's a good analogy for the film as a whole, like incredibly empty. Like there's a lot of history between like Hayden and Amy, and yet none of it's interesting. Like it just, we're really given an awful lot of backstory about these characters, and just none of it is particularly memorable or worth mentioning. And it feels very student filmy in that way. Like I actually think this would have maybe worked better being 20 films shorter, I was about to say 20 minutes shorter. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of stuff here that if you'd have cut it down or cut it out a bit, we might have had something a little bit more of a positive experience from it, I guess. I don't know, maybe that's overly optimistic.
Well, it's just lots of the stuff isn't just incredibly like just stupid levels of dumb. Like I know there's like being silly, but then there's like... So I messaged you during this when I was watching it. The fucking credit card, I can't get over.
Mm.
They like, this woman had a cut on her neck and how they patch it up is by taping a credit card to it. And I'm like, you're in a fucking med bay. Like, the best you have is a credit. Why? Why? I don't understand. Is it because it's a metaphor for him sacrificing his money? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm not really sure.
They have bandages in the cupboard and they're looking for tape.
But we know they're crap nurses, because when the captain says, right, we're trying to get everyone down onto the lower levels, he calls the nurse's office and she's like, oh, we're in the middle of a really important conversation. And they're not. They've been reading about the first Titanic. Like, and I can't even remember what the fact was.
Well, they were talking about a boyfriendy situation, I think. They're talking about the Hayden situation. She's like, oh, do you think this? And then she's like, oh, we're actually talking about something really important. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Lots of things.
But also the fact that they send everyone to the lower decks. Like, so the boat has this 15-minute warning from the Coast Guards that a big wave is about to hit. They decide to not warn anybody until 2 minutes to go. Like, they had 15 minutes. They were supposedly running around doing stuff, but for some reason they didn't tell anyone to get a life jacket on until 2 minutes before the wave hits. And then they send them downstairs. And then there's this one really angry guy that they keep showing the staff hitting. But I'm like, the angry guy is in the right here, because why the fuck are you trapping them downstairs until it's convenient for you?
Mm.
And then getting them in elevators while the ship is sinking. What the fuck? There's like the OSHA would have a fucking conniption at this.
Yeah.
No one knows what they're doing. It's like, come on. You're naming it Titanic 2 and you have no plans?
If you were to build a ship and you called it the Titanic 2, there is no fucking way that you could allow it to to meet the same fate as the original Titanic. That would just be too ironic. Like, you would have to make sure that the safety features were up to spec. So the idea that they've called it the Titanic 2 and it doesn't have basic fucking safety features on board and also can't take a beating to the side from a wave. Yeah.
And the staff don't know what to do, and they only have two fucking medical team members.
I know. Two nurses on the entire ship with 30 people, apparently.
Again, the all-knowing dad who gives instructions to only Amy now. He's given up on the others. Keeps warning about this fucking second wave that's supposedly going to happen. But we wait a long-ass time for the second wave, by the way, listener. Like, we are waiting. Mm-hmm. And when the second wave comes, it is explosive, and we assume everyone else in the lifeboats do die. But he really pisses me off with how little he helps, considering like he's the only one helping. The Coast Guard, for some reason, don't really care about this boat full of people. They don't send anyone else out. I think they forget they're on a helicopter, too, because sometimes it looks like they're on like a cargo plane. Like, they don't consistently animate what they're on. And I'm like, what's happened to your helicopter? Why is it so much bigger? And why can she stand up in it? Because helicopters are quite small.
Another interesting point there, actually, is like the relationship between Amy and her dad, because they have a really kind of blunt conversation quite early on, and she goes, she ends the conversation by going, "I love you," and then he goes like, "Yeah, bye," and cuts her off before she gets to finish it. And then, as I said, there's the bit where he refuses to tell his colleague that he's speaking to his daughter. She's like, "Yeah, she's just a nurse." I'm just like, wow, that's quite cold. But then they're quite back on good terms again, like very out of the blue, I suppose. And he says something to Hayden, like, "This is your chance to prove that you are the honorable man that I always believed you were before," or something like that, or "that you made me believe you were before. You need to do that now." And I'm just like, why are you punishing your daughter for, like, her ex, basically? It's a really weird dynamic. But not only that, like, if your daughter is back in speaking with him again, that's her choice, you know? Like, their relationship's really strange to me. I just don't get it.
All the relationships are really strange to me. No one here is likable or good apart from the innocent bystanders who all die, but we're not allowed to care about them. Like, they're literally just props for Hayden and Amy to walk around. Even the captain who goes down with the ship, which, you know, is only implied briefly because he's talking to the Coast Guard, and then he gets bloated up because everyone gets bloated up. Yeah, it's a weird framing because I know that Jack and Rose were the main characters of the Titanic, like the David Cameron one, right? James Cameron.
James Cameron.
Yeah, why did they call him David?
Prime Minister.
That's why. David Cameron's Titanic, which is a good metaphor for what's happened. Yeah, okay. James Cameron's Titanic, right? Yeah, they are the mains, but there is a sense of tragedy with the other people and lots of stories going on in the background that we care about, like the old couple and you know, all sorts in the band.
That's a really good point. And it did make me think as well, actually, like the old couple, we don't know an awful lot about them, but they're a really good example of like some small characters on the side that you do kind of care about. And they... to the extent that they did, they kind of make this, you can infer, I suppose, in my head, it's a kind of an honorable decision to stay behind and go down. And it's not because they have any connection to the ship, but it's because they're older, I think, or I would like to think. And you think, I've lived my life, basically. And so I'm going to let some of the younger people go. There's an awful lot of old ladies getting on those fucking light boats in this one. A lot less honourable decisions being made there. A lot of people who have lived their lives and are just like, no, I'm going to keep living.
Well, in theory, there's meant to be enough. Like, you would assume getting on the boat now there would be enough, because I don't want to die ever.
No.
But, like, there's absolutely no reason for there not to be enough of them, knowing what happened in the last one. Do you know what I mean? There's, like, no reason. And these ones are, like, little submarine guys. I don't understand why the wave actually destroyed the lifeboats.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Like, it's weird that you'd make lifeboats that can't survive being hit.
My lifeboat needs rescuing. Pretty much. But you're right, there's not really any side characters that you care about. Like, you're not cutting away from Amy and Hayden temporarily to see how, you know, some old person or some, like, whatever is doing elsewhere. Like, it's all them, and it's all dragged out, and it's not particularly interesting a lot of the time. So,
and it's dark as well. It's really dark at points. You can't really see what's happening.
I'm so pleased you said that, because I watched bits that were it was taking place underwater, under the ship. And I turned my iPad up to full brightness and I still couldn't see what was going on. And I was like, I wonder if it's like my iPad. But no, I really struggled. So
no, I had it on the sky glass. But it was sunny. Oh. I will say it's a sunny day. And there was little patches of sunlight hanging it. But I really couldn't see what was happening with some bits of it when we were outside. I was like, what the fuck is happening here? Just kind of trying to guess. There was two staff members who were trying to stop people from going to the higher decks, which was wrong, by the way. They shouldn't have done that. Why would you put people on the lower decks in a sinking ship? And they maliciously, like, there was room in a lifeboat, and they maliciously kicked a guy in the head because he was upset at the staff members for fucking up, you know. And it was, he was mad at Hayden because it is his fault. Like, I'm like, yeah, you're right. That man deserves justice, Callum, because he has now drowned the bottom of the ocean without getting a lifeboat. I know they didn't survive in a lifeboat either, but like, hope would have been there for him. And they just did it out of spite.
I think I was thinking about that, actually. That's one of the cruelest things that would be on this situation or the original Titanic, or indeed the Titanic in real life, is the denying people of hope. And so I think one of the most upsetting bits of James Cameron's Titanic for me is actually when you've got all of the guys who are locked down in the bowels of the ship. So it's not just that you're having to stay behind and sink. You're going to be denied the opportunity to try and save yourself. You're going to get locked down there as well. Like, that's really upsetting to me. It's not quite as bad here, but you do have that guy who's basically doing as anyone else would do, trying to save himself, and he gets punched in the face for it. And you kind of think, well, fuck me then. I guess I'll just go drown in the bowels of the ship. Like, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to... which, incidentally, is what they want him to do, I suppose. But...
yeah, because they're clearly trying to make it so the audience will not like this guy because he gets angry at the staff. I'm like, well, no, the staff have fucked up in so many ways here.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Justice for him.
Yeah, justice for that guy, that angry man.
That nameless character whose name we do not know.
No. But he's one of the better actors, because I'm like, yeah, dude, you're the only one reacting like you should.
He's the only sympathetic character in this, or one of the only ones, I would say. But
well, you said that some of the people acted okay. Who would you say acted okay?
I actually think the woman that played Amy was all right at different points. But again, the script that she's got to work with is pretty piss poor. So maybe that's controversial. I think she was better than some of the others.
I think, yeah, she's probably a good B-movie actress, but she doesn't belong anywhere else.
No. No, I think that's fair. I think she's my top pick. I actually think Bruce Davison, who played her dad, wasn't terrible. But again, it's working with what you've got. So
his dialogue was really annoying because he kept saying, "Now listen to me, listen to me, listen to me." And I'm like, yeah, we're listening. We're drowning, but we're listening.
Get on with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get to the point, sir. No, I agree. His dialogue's pretty bad. But I think he did all right with what he's got. I do wonder if he was maybe too good to be in this, because the actual guy that plays him, that plays James, Bruce Davidson, he has been in like a lot of quite big things, and he's like Emmy Award nominee, and you know, basically I think he's too big to be in this film, but you know, sometimes you just do what you gotta do. That said,
for that paycheck.
Yeah, sometimes you got to do what you got to do for that paycheck. But then that said, it looks like he's been in an awful lot of shite as well. So, you know, maybe not.
Yeah. Did you know, Callum, that the boat they used was the Queen Mary, which was made in Scotland?
Interesting. I did not know that. Well,
a wee bit of shame for us to take away.
They done her dirty, but that's a nice way to end things on a bit of shame for us. Yeah, you're right.
So, Callum, one of us is bored. Were you bored?
To be honest. I started watching it before I went to bed, and I had to stop it after about 25 minutes because I was like, I'm going to fall asleep during this. And, like, you know, that's not necessarily, like, a bad thing in itself. Sometimes you can't stay awake for something, like, legitimately fine. I went to bed and I woke up and I had to watch it this morning so that we could talk about it now. And it was a slog to get through. I paused it a couple of times just to go and do other things because I'm cleaning and things. And every time I came back to it, I was like, oh, fucking hell. Like, it's just not that interesting, I think. And for all the... I feel like we've been quite... I wouldn't say we've been overly positive throughout this, but I think we've maybe made it sound a little bit more interesting or humorous than it is, but it's funny for not the reasons that it's intended to be funny, I would say. Like, it's a bit of a dark kind of slightly twisted idea in concept in the first place, because no one, not one single person was asking for Titanic 2, and yet we got it anyway. But I think, yeah, I even for the novelty factor of it, I found it quite boring. So yeah, no, I was bored. How about you? Were you bored?
I was bored shitless. I was having more fun messaging you about it than I was watching it, which is why there's bits where I clearly missed stuff, because I was just like, I was like, well, this is going on forever. Second wave, please just hit end it, please. And then it ends. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I almost feel like I've missed something here. It's just finished now. I suffered and now it's done.
That's it. The ending is incredibly sudden. Like, it's just, oh.
He's dead. Bye.
He's dead. Bye. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's it really then. Yeah, so we're both bored.
That's the first time I've been bored since we've started doing this bored thing, you know.
Yeah, I know. Wow. Oh, that's a shame. Well, I mean, a little bit of variety, I suppose. They can't all be good. Definitely not.
I try and find enjoyment where I can, but in this one I was just like, this is not a good time.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Yeah, if you do want to watch it, it's available currently on Amazon Prime and apparently on YouTube as well. So yeah, if you wish to indulge in that, you're free to do so. We're concluding Unnecessary Sequel Month next week with The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2. So join us then for another wonderful Disney sequel. And we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening. We hope you've liked what you've heard. Want more? Follow us on Instagram at One of Us Is Bored. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Leave us a rating and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts.